Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We're positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road with our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have the Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. Long litany list of places beginning at Fadley's here this Friday that we're going to be I could give you the long list or the short list. I'll make it real quick. June 4th on Tuesday, we're going to be at Cooper's and Timonium. On June 6th, next Thursday, we're going to be at State Fair in Catonsville doing brunch before the Blue Jays game. On Wednesday the 12th, we're going to be at Coco's in Lauraville having crab cakes. On the 14th, we're going to be at Slancha and Cooper's down in Fells Point. It's going to be packed. It's going to be Fleet Week. That's a big, big thing going on the weekend of June 14th. We're going to be back in Dundalk at Costas from 1 to 4. That's before the Orioles-Yankees game. That's on June 20th. And then June 25th, we're going to be at Pappas in Parkville. Last but never least, close to home. And I'm going to get the chicken franchise over there as well with Jeannie. And Luke Jones joins us now. We've talked a lot of pitching as the Orioles are on a tear again after bad things happened in St. Louis. Good things happened in Chicago. Now they're home. You and I will be together at Fadley's on Friday. We've talked a lot about the rotation. We talked a lot about relievers and where they are hitting the baseball. It's hot. It's cold. Sometimes it's cold all night. And then, you know, a couple big flies in Chicago. You win a game. You sweep another series. Stowers, the depth of all of this, Kerstad, Holiday, guys that aren't even here yet, and the guys that are here, we're now getting into that. Fill out your all-star ballot for Jordan Westberg or whoever it's going to be, but this team's loaded, and it's loaded from a perspective that I was running around New York for 2 days. Every time I looked in the window, Major League Baseball is doing cut-ins with the Orioles because the Orioles are an it team, if there's such a thing.
Yeah, I mean, even with the Yankees playing how they've played and the Orioles being relegated to second place for the time being, although tied in the loss column as they finish the holiday weekend. But, you know, a lot of good young players. I think this is definitely a team that's in transition to some degree. I think that's very evident with what we're seeing in the outfield right now. You know, you mentioned Kyle Stowers. A really good game for him on Monday. Some other moments over the last week where he's, you know, hasn't been playing every day, but seems as though he's taking advantage of his opportunities. And in the meantime, we've seen what's happened with Austin Hayes. Although I'll point out Austin Hayes, look at his numbers since returning from the IL. He's been okay. You know, he swung the bat okay. But we've talked a lot about Cedric Mullins. And to his credit, Cedric Mullins had a nice day on Monday, or two-run triple. Two other times he hit the ball extremely hard. You hope that's the start of a turnaround for him, but I think what we're seeing with this outfield at this point, you know, we've seen Hayes already be relegated, demoted to fourth outfielder status, so to speak. I think Cedric Mullins is very much in danger of being in that kind of a position at this point in time. And you know, you go back a full calendar year now, you know, go back to last year's Memorial Day, Cedric Mullins. Since then, you know, he's been a sub 600 OPS guy. You know, that's not good enough, you know, even with the defense, even with the speed, you know, that's not good enough. So we've seen Colton Cowser make a huge play as a center fielder in Chicago over the weekend, you know, to end a ball game. What, Friday night, I guess that was. He can play a rock solid center field. You know, is he going to be Cedric Mullins at his best? No, but I think he can play plus defense in center field. So that puts even more pressure on someone like Mullins. So in the meantime, you know, you want to see Kyle Stowers get some opportunities. Whenever Heston Kerstad might return to the major leagues, you want to see him get some opportunities. So we've been talking about it going back to spring training, you know, where I was saying over and over and over the days of just automatically penciling in Hayes, Mullins, Santander, no questions asked. To me, we're over at that point, certainly over at this point where, you know, Hayes has become a fourth outfielder, and we'll see about Mullins, whether he's going to maintain an everyday role.
And by the way, it's happened very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you have good young players in your system, and you have guys that are getting closer and closer to free agency and becoming more expensive, and they're not old, but they are getting older. And for every player that we think about that plays into his mid-30s, like Adam Jones, for example, you do have other guys that they get to even just age 29, 30, 31, and suddenly What was a starting player becomes a guy that is a platoon player, or a guy that becomes a fourth outfielder. So it doesn't mean that you're jettisoning, you're going to jettison these guys from the roster, but I've said it, Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins and even Santander, who, by the way, is still dealing with the knee. I saw him walk into the Orioles clubhouse on Monday, and he's still got a wrap on that knee that he bruised in the Toronto series a couple weeks ago. So I think they've been trying to give him a little more time. He's not having a great year, but he's been better than Mullins and Hayes. This is an outfield that there's some opportunity here, and Colton Cowser has seized that. I think that's evident. He's the one guy at this point that you kind of feel pretty confident about. It's going to be penciled into the lineup at least 6 out of every 7 days, if not every day. So Stowers, he looks more confident. It's a very small sample. He's got to take advantage. But what he did on Monday, which, he had the two-run double. Keep in mind, he fell behind 0-2 before he worked the count even and then doubled the opposite way. So it was a really good approach. And he drives in 4 runs. You feel good for him. He's a really nice kid. We know that previous times that he's been up, one, it hasn't gone very well. Two, he hasn't played every day. So that's made it even more challenging for him. But, I want to see him in the lineup more often than
Wouldn't
not
play
for the
every
time
day
being.
because Mullins and Hayes, these guys were in Santander. Those are the guys in the way, right?
Correct.
Literally.
So now you're in this transition period. And look, this doesn't mean I'm banishing all the veterans to the bench, but no one's on scholarship here, right? I mean, unless you're Gunnar Henderson, who's an MVP candidate, or Adley Rutschman, who's an all-star catcher, it's okay for some of these guys to sit and not play every day, because you have a lot of talented players you want to get in the mix and see what you have. So, in the case of Stowers, let's see what it looks like. There's nothing I'd like more than to see Kyle Stowers over the next, I don't know, 2 weeks, let's say, just throwing out an arbitrary number. Over the next 2 weeks, I want to see the kid make 10 or 11 starts. It doesn't have to be every day, but I want to see it be most days. And let me see what it looks like. If he ends up looking like it did a couple years ago, where it was too much swing and miss and he's struggling, then okay, we'll revisit that. But, he's an athletic guy. He's got big time power, and he hasn't even shown that yet at the major league level. But anyone who watched him at Norfolk, he hits home runs. He can hit the ball, especially a lefty bat. We know that plays at Camden Yards, as we've seen with Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman and Anthony Santander the last few years. So let's see what it looks like. I'm guessing, my gut on Kyle Stowers the last couple of years has told me he's probably more of a fourth outfielder type, but let him prove that. Let him show that. Let's not make sure that just because you have these veteran guys, or you have someone like Kerstad, who's the former second overall pick in the draft, doesn't mean you want to write someone else off, because we've seen this with Gunnar Henderson, who is an MVP candidate, and he was a second round pick. Every team in baseball could have drafted Gunnar Henderson, including the Orioles when they took Rutschman 1-1, in the same draft, which is pretty incredible still when you think about it. But, Jordan Westberg, same deal. He was a end of the first round, that sandwich pick kind of guy. And we've seen him become an all-star caliber kind of third baseman, at least that potential, I think. Let's see what Kyle Stowers looks like on a little more of a regular basis. He plays good defense. He's athletic. He can run. Not going to steal a ton of bases, but he can run. That athletic type that the Orioles have clearly, earmarked as far as their evaluation. They've drafted athletes. I think we can all agree on that. So let's see what it looks like. And in the meantime, hey, Cedric Mullins, good game on Monday, but you've got to build on that. You've got to start becoming more consistent at the plate. It can't just be, oh, you hit a home run or you hit a triple and then you don't do anything for the next 7 games. And he'd be the first to tell you that. Mullins knows it. Hayes knows it, from earlier in the year. That doesn't mean these guys are written off entirely, but they've known this. We've been talking about this for a couple of years now. We've talked about this scenario where these guys that you have this affinity for because they were part of the turnaround and they were part of the 110 loss teams, and they've been part of seeing the Orioles become good and relevant again and become a playoff team. But we also acknowledge that there are guys in the system coming that are going to be better than some of these guys. Not all. Not all, and not every prospect's going to pan out. And, we've seen a little bit of that as well, at least to varying degrees. But, it really is a case of competition. And that is very evident in the outfield. The infield's a little more set for the time being, although certainly we can get to Jorge Mateo and Jackson Holliday and whatever that could end up looking like the rest of the summer. But the outfield, I feel good about Colton Cowser being out there. Santander, I'm still not, I'm not writing him off as an everyday guy, whether it's right field or as the DH on any given night. I'm not at that point with him, even though he's not having his best season. But with Hayes and Mullins, it very much is a case of you've got to earn your playing time. I mean, that's where we are at this point because you have Cowser, you have Stowers, Kerstad, you assume will be back in that mix at some point in time, assuming he's not traded for a pitcher.
I was gonna say who
So
he's the dealable one, right?
maybe.
Because he's the guy with the glove deficiency, which will be something that they would always say. And by the way, O'Hearn and Mountcastle and Mateo are shining examples of your ass is on the line, your job's on the line. In O'Hearn's case, get out. In Mateo's case, not there, not there. Well, try the outfield. Well, maybe you'll just be a pinch runner because you're fast, right, kid? Oh, we forgot about your glove. Oh, you can do that too. And then there's Westbrook. Like, every day we do a half an hour on someone. I guess Stowers is the guy today, who was so far down the depth chart. I called him Stoughton like 4 months ago. You just said the only one I'm really comfortable with is Colton Cowser. Dude, if you would have said that in Valentine's Day, I would have said give you the saliva test, right? Like all of this, it changes fast, but
Sure.
it also shows for an O'Hearn and a Mountcastle that back to the and Mateo to the original point, making it tough for Skip to get them out of the lineup of a team that's going to win 100 games, right?
No question about it. And as I wrote in my 12 Orioles thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com, through Memorial Day weekend, which we know, any baseball fan knows, that's the symbolic checkpoint of what? It's not early anymore. We're about a third of the way through the season. Still a long way to go. Let's be clear on that, but it's not really early anymore. Memorial Day is the checkpoint where you say, okay, this is, what you are at Memorial Day feels a little more real, for lack of a better descriptor. We know what this team is. It's a contender. We knew it was going to be a contender, and even after the sweep, all of that. But one point that I made, if I had told you in mid-March, Nestor, that the Orioles' primary second baseman, without saying the name, just saying their primary second baseman would be hitting 250, would have a 300 on base percentage, would have a 470 slugging percentage, would have 15 extra base hits, would be playing good defense at second base, would be giving you speed, although that's not the perfect comparison I'm about to make. If I had said all that to you, you would have been saying what? Jackson Holliday's off to a pretty good start in his major league career. Jorge Mateo's really been huge for this baseball team. And I say that as someone last July and last August and last September was wondering why he was still on this roster. Because as I said over and over, and look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He was awful with the bat after last April. He had the fantastic April, and he was terrible with the bat the rest of the way. And he still continued to play against left-handed pitching. And I get it. They were trying to keep him in the mix. And, they didn't know exactly what to do with Gunnar Henderson, whether he's going to be their everyday shortstop or still play some third base, whatever. And I understood you wanted to hold on to Mateo for that speed factor in the postseason, albeit they only ended up playing three postseason games before they were swept. But I think there was very much an expectation at the end of last year. If you had asked most Orioles fans, and I think if you had asked most media, if Jorge Mateo would still be on this roster come June the following year, I think you would have found a lot of people saying no to that, knowing that Jackson Holliday was on the way, not knowing at that point that Joey Ortiz was going to be traded in the offseason. But the
Or you'd
point
say,
was,
what's the role? And it certainly wouldn't be in
right.
this kind of a role. You'd say,
Sure.
how many at bats is he going to get? 113.
Yeah. So, and look, let's be very clear. When I'm praising him right now, this is not me saying that he's going to continue to be the everyday second baseman for the rest of the year. I think Jackson Holliday is going to be back at some point. Maybe not next week, but I think it's going to be at some point in 24. But I think with what Jorge Mateo has done this year, we already knew he could play a heck of a shortstop, right? That was a known. We already knew he could run. That's a known commodity, you know, and he's still young enough to know that he can still fly. And there was a perfect example of that Monday. Scores on a sacrifice fly from Adley Rutschman to shallow center field and wasn't even a play, you know, even though a lot of guys probably wouldn't even have taken off from third base in that spot. But that speed plays. But he has made himself, and I'm not saying that this is an incredible feat, but I think just how quickly it happened, he's playing a really good second base. And yeah, most shortstops can make that transition, but a lot of times it takes some time. You know, the clock's different when you're talking about being a second baseman compared to a shortstop. He's playing plus defense at second base. The range is impressive for a
Feels like
second
one of those
baseman.
guys born with a glove in his hand, you know,
Yeah,
literally,
and that's
right?
my thing. So even when Jackson Holliday returns, and making every assumption, every expectation that Jackson Holliday, you know, whether he's going to be a Hall of Famer or whether he's just going to be a really good player, you know, I'm not going to waver just because he struggled in April. But assuming he comes and becomes the starting second baseman and a plus player in their
When do you
next,
expect that? All-star break?
you know, it's tough to say. I mean, you look at his numbers at Norfolk right now, and then I want to finish my thought on Mateo, but you look at his numbers right now. I
One
mean, they
does
haven't.
feed to the other, right? Like
Yeah,
literally, they're intertwined, right?
well, I mean, Mateo's made it where they don't have to rush Holliday back because he's been an above average, rock solid contributor at second base for them. You know, I'm not saying he's an all-star. Let's be clear. I'm not going crazy here, but go look at all of his numbers. He's been valuable to them. And I think with Holliday, the swing adjustments, you know, he's not hitting for a great average, hasn't hit for a ton of power. He's drawn a lot of walks. You know, he hasn't been bad, but I said this to you when he got sent back. I even predicted at that point, you're going to see him scuffle a little bit. And it has nothing to do with between the ears. It has nothing to do with a bad attitude or being deflated from being sent down. It's because the Orioles wanted him to make some adjustments with his swing. And now he's in the process of doing that. So, you know, I think you said the All-Star break. And look, I haven't heard from anyone in the organization that, you know, is tipping this off or making predictions themselves. I think that sounds about right. You know, that sounds about right. Think about Grayson Rodriguez, right? They sent him down right around this time last year, and he was back right after the All-Star break. Now, it's not a perfect comp. You're talking about a pitcher compared to a second baseman. You're talking about someone who's still very young. He's not even 21 years old. But yeah, I think the second half of the season, you know, that's kind of where I see this. But because Mateo has played so well, 2 months ago, we would have been debating, all right, who's going to stay and who's going to go between Ramon Arias and Jorge Mateo? With no disrespect meant to Ramon Arias, who won a gold glove a couple years ago, had some solid seasons. It's not even a debate. I mean, Jorge Mateo is far more valuable than Ramon Arias at this point in time. So even when Holliday comes back, to me, Mateo has really solidified himself as being this team's utility infielder. You know, he can play second and short. With Westberg's flexibility, you can make that work. You know, Westberg can play third base. You know, if you have an injury and Mateo plays second base, you know, Mateo can play short, of course, if Gunnar needs a day. It's not his best spot, but he can play the outfield and probably not kill you for a day or two if he has to do that. And you know he's going to be a heck of an option as a pinch runner off the bench late in games. So that's a valuable role I just carved out there. You know, even if he's not going to continue to have a 770 OPS, but you know, he's got 15 extra base hits. This hasn't just been a, you know, a bloop the ball in the right field and hope for the best. You know, he's hit the ball with authority. He hit a long home run in Chicago over the weekend. So it's really the, you know, Holliday, they obviously had plans on him being in the majors,
Is
whether it was going to
Mateo
be.
a guy you could trade and get a real pitcher for?
No. I
No, but
mean,
I mean, if it were him, I mean, you give him in a prospect. Like, I'm trying to think of, well, who's going to want what for pitching later on in the year, where this Andrew Miller is going to appear, and what it's going to cost.
I mean, by himself, no, of course not. And I wasn't implying that you were suggesting that. You know, could you com would he be a throw-in piece that would be appealing to teams? Sure. But I think the Orioles would like to keep him at this point. Like I said,
Well, that's your
the
point. Your
defense,
point is he has more value to the Orioles than he might have to any other team
it probably
because of
does.
that role, and because they value speed big time and they value
Absolutely.
defense big time. He does both of those well. Dude, he hit the ball better than anybody on the team last April for a minute, right? I mean, he
Well,
is
and
capable of, he's capable of being a guy in October that, will go 6 for 11 in a series and knock your socks off,
yeah, I mean, you see it now. It's more fleeting than you'd prefer typically, but yeah. So I mean, let's look at this month of May. You know, there's been a lot of angst about the Orioles' offense. If you go and look at the splits for the month of May, I'd venture to say that Jorge Mateo probably profiles as their fourth or fifth best hitter this month. I off the top of my head, I haven't looked at it recently. I know I looked at it a week, you know, maybe 10 days ago, whatever it was. He's been valuable for them. You know, he's been really useful for them. The point I was making about Holiday, think about it. They had Adam Frazier last year. Year before that, they had signed Rougned Odor. You know, they had their lefty swinging second baseman. I guess they did bring in Tony Kemp for a minute the first week of the season, back in April. But the point is, they absolutely thought Jackson Holiday was going to be on the major league roster at this point in time. So I'm not saying that that was going to be a crisis if it didn't work, if this scenario played out, but Jorge Mateo has absolutely eased the burden of production at second base, you know, that you weren't getting from Jackson Holiday. That's why I said if you just did a blind statistical look at what Mateo's done, if you looked at that blind and someone told you in mid-March that's what they'd be getting from their second baseman, you would have assumed it was Jackson Holiday having a pretty decent start to his rookie season. So
This is where
it's
I was going to jump the holiday thing and say, this team projects to play baseball games in October. I don't think
Yeah.
we're going to put Jackson Holiday projects to be the starting second baseman of game one.
I think.
I guess,
I think.
but he ain't done nothing here, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's
Like,
got
so
a,
I don't
yeah.
know how you project that, but we're going to try. And I guess this all goes into our. We would have thought Urias and Mateo wouldn't be on a team by now,
Well,
right? Like, there's all sorts of things we may have thought Couser could have stunk, yeah, but he didn't, and he hasn't.
sure.
And we could have thought, well, Westberg might not take that next step,
He
So
has.
there's all of this questioning about all of these people, and I don't know that Mullins and Hayes were guys when we were down in Sarasota in March. We projected to be quote unquote failures or
On
flops
the bench.
or receding players in the Orioles' arc of how they're going to win 105 games this year.
Yeah, and I think it's very important, and some of the examples you just cited, I mean, it makes the point for me, but it's a long season. At this time last year, you know, we were talking about Ryan Mountcastle, right? He had the bout with vertigo over the summer, and lots of talk about trading him or him not being an everyday player. And O'Hearn was playing so well, and we've seen what's happened then. And you know, Mountcastle was recently in a he's streaky. You know, lots of players in Major League Baseball are streaky hitters. You know, we've seen that with Mountcastle now for 3 or 4 years. Had what, three hits to the opposite field on Monday. That's usually a sign that Mountcastle's getting ready to bust out. But the point is, with all these guys, it's a long season. And I will also say this to go back to your Holiday point. No, I'm not going to sit here and just make an assumption, but I will continue to make the projection. Why? Because he's still the best position prospect in baseball. That hasn't changed, even though he had a really brutal first taste of the
He's
major
still
leagues.
12 years old for
And
crying out loud.
yeah, exactly. He's 20 years old. And on the flip side, after I just spent 5 minutes praising him, we have also seen Jorge Mateo go through stretches of time where he's really good with the bat and then go through 4 months where he does nothing. So I still will make that projection. And look, just because right now we're talking about Mullins and Hayes as being guys that, you know, in the case of Hayes has already lost his starting spot. I mean, he's become their fourth outfielder. You know, he's the new Ryan McKenna at this point. You know, you hope an upgraded version of that, and I think will be an upgraded version. But, you know, in the case of Mullins, maybe Monday was the start of him going on a tear. You know, it's a long season. We see this a lot with the bullpen, where you'll have, you know, Jacob Webb's a great example of this. You know, when Kimbrel was really struggling, Jacob Webb saved a couple games for the Orioles. And now we've seen Jacob Webb the last week to 10 days not look quite as good. You know, There's ebbs and flows to this. I mean, this is how this works. When you play 162, you better have some guys that you wouldn't be expecting to contribute, make some contributions for you. And yeah, for every Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, you hope, Anthony Santander the last few years, for every guy like that that is an everyday player for 6 months and plays at a really high level, you do have some guys that, it's like a shooting star, right? You enjoy the ride for a couple of weeks and they help you win a game or two and then they're gone. Taylor
Well, look at
Teagarden
Suarez.
for the Orioles a decade ago.
Yeah,
Yeah, Suarez is a great example of that. Like I said, Jacob Webb, we'll see. I think Jacob Webb has an arm that you like, but am I going to sit here and say to you with any level of confidence that Jacob Webb and Albert Suarez are going to be pitching in meaningful games for the Orioles in September? I have no idea. No
Yeah, if
one
you had told
does.
me 3 weeks ago that Stowers was going to have big RBIs and help them win games on Memorial Day when they're giving away ketchup, relish, and mustard shakes, I would have said, how's he getting at bats? How is he even getting in the lineup? Because that was going to be the question from the beginning. And when he gets in the lineup, what's he going to do? Well, when they give you the bat and you swing it, you get to stay Colton Cowser. And when you don't, you get to go to Norfolk and work on things, Jackson Holliday.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how this works. And again, just because someone's playing great right now doesn't mean that that's going to be the case in 2 months. And on the flip side, Jackson Holliday struggled and got sent back. And we've seen, and Mike Elias said it at the time, that I think it was very clear that this was not going to be a quick reset in Norfolk and then he's back 2 weeks later. I think they wanted him to, process what he saw at the major league level, make adjustments with his swing, adjust the leg kick that he has, all of that. And he's been working on that. And the numbers haven't been awful at AAA, but they haven't wowed you to the point where you say, oh my gosh, this guy has nothing left to prove. He's got to go to the major leagues. So, but he's going to be back. And I'm guessing he's going to be that much better for it when he does return, because I think he's a really talented kid. And I don't think so many people, the Orioles and otherwise, who called him the best prospect in baseball, I don't think all those people were wrong. I don't think those two and a half weeks that he really, really struggled at, was it even 2.5 weeks? I can't remember. It's only like 10 games, whatever it was. But I think when he comes back, he'll be better for it. And in the meantime, Jorge Mateo's been really helpful, really useful, really valuable to them playing second base at a time where, you could have been saying, well, their second base is that's been a black hole for them. It's been really bad. No, Mateo's produced for them there. So
Well, that's why
it's
I'm saying,
really.
even in a trade piece for any of these guys. Now, Hazel and Mullins seem to be a little more pricey and they've been struggling. Although, we grabbed Yankees trash heap guys last year and won 101 games with them. So, like that,
You never know.
those kind of players move around, right? As we get there. But the value of being able to play and showing that you're a major league player. I guess the case, well, I was going to say, in the trade standpoint, these guys are big league players. All of them, they have 34 big league players. So at this point, while they're big league players and they're not stupid expensive in regard to a trade situation, as you're starting to mate up with, I guess, only relief pitchers, I guess they won't be dealing for another starting pitcher, right?
We'll see. I don't
You're
know. I mean,
right.
the way
I don't
things are going
know, right?
health-wise, you never know. With some of the injuries of late, you might be revisiting that idea. I would tend to agree with
Well,
your.
the other part is Burns feels like very fleeting. He feels like Diamond Stone to me. You know what I mean? It feels like he's not going to be here next year. So I keep thinking to myself, if you're dealing and you're Elias into this, you're going to want to deal into this year's Dylan Cease and figure out how to curse
Control for
that
next
and,
year.
find that a guy that you're going to have. And if you're going to deal, it's going to be more than just take one. And you're saying, well, you can't have Holiday. We said that about Dylan Cease last year or whatever. Who are the guys that are going to go? Because it's going to come from this pile of players because they've
Sure.
had such. It's insane, that Stowers is up and hitting the ball right now. And we're talking about two all-stars and 30-30 guys as though they're yesterday's news and they're 30 years old.
I mean, it's but we've been saying this was going to happen. That's why some people and I wasn't banging the table for this, but I thought it was an idea that had some merit. It's why, the last offseason, I probably would have explored trading one of my veteran outfielders for this very scenario coming to fruition. Not so much expecting that Hayes was going to struggle or predicting that Mullins was going to struggle, but just the idea that, yeah, you do have Colton Cowser coming and you still have Kyle Stowers who could potentially click. And, we'll see about Heston Kerstad. That was why some people thought, this might be the right time, especially coming off of an all-star season, knowing that he's only another year out from free agency, of maybe trading Austin Hayes at that point in time or trading Cedric Mullins at that point in time. Look, I'm not saying that that's an easy thing to do when you're talking about guys that have been important to the turnaround of the last couple of years. But hey, that's why Mike Elias makes the big bucks. That's why you got to make tough decisions. That's why we've seen Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta on the football side trade valuable players, when they're a year away from free agency, or knowing that they're not going to sign them long term and say, you know what, let's go get a we can go get a first round pick for Marquise Brown. Let's do it. And they did it. And they got Tyler Linderbaum, a Pro Bowl center, out of it. So you've got to
Managing
make
these
those.
assets, right? Period,
It's
right?
tough. It is. I mean, it's a let's be very clear. It is a the best problem to have, but it's still a challenge. It's still something that
Well,
you
you're
have to
only
try to
an
manage if
asset
you want
when
to
you're perceived
maximize it.
as a big league
So,
player who can help Team X produce and
yeah.
fill a role, whatever that is. And that's why guys like Mateo and guys that can field the ball like Mullins and Hayes to some degree. We'll give that guy a chance. We'll bring him in. We got an injured player. We think we're in the race. We think we can get to 87 or 88 wins. There's a lot of that going on. There
No
is.
question. And I want to go back to one point you made. Not that I have a specific name in mind, but you made a point talking about the starting pitching. And I mean, look, 2 weeks ago, yeah, we were talking about a six-man rotation and oh, they have too much pitch. I never thought they had too much pitching. I thought that was, that felt like something you say when you cross your fingers and knock on wood, certainly. But
Well, Irvin looks like Jamie Moyer right now, right? Like,
hey,
so,
he's
you
doing a nice
know.
job. But you made a point, and I think it's an interesting one. Because I'm in agreement with you, and I've said all along, I don't think Mike Elias philosophically believes in being in that kind of market that Corbin Burns is going to be in this offseason. I think he looks at it in the way that we've been talking about it. Pitchers break, and you're going to make that kind of an investment, betting on Corbin Burns staying healthy and not being in a position where you're paying a year and a half for him to do nothing but rehab from Tommy John surgery. And, I'm being a little over the top in saying that, but not really, when you consider just how the game is trending in that way. But you made a point about going out and maybe getting another starting pitcher. I think, it's not going to be Dylan Cease, obviously, but that kind of a guy where you're talking about getting someone that could fortify your rotation for this year, with some of the health questions they have, including, if Bradish is going to continue to do what he did on this weekend and stay healthy for the next 5 months and all of that. But can you add someone that fortifies your rotation for 2024 and essentially replaces Corbin Burns' spot next year? If you can do that, and I mean, that's not going to cost you Jackson Holliday per se, but it might cost you Heston Kerstad. Might cost Jacoby Mayo, not saying both of them, but maybe one of those guys, and throw in a second tier guy, third tier guy, whatever it is. And keep in mind, the Orioles' second and third tier prospects are still better than other teams. We always talk about the same five guys at the top, but it's a really deep system. So I do wonder if the developments of the last couple of weeks with John Means, Dean Kramer, although Kramer doesn't sound like that's going to be a long-term deal with Means. When anytime they talk about second opinion, I'm just hoping this doesn't mean he has to get surgery again, because I feel for the guy. I really do. Point is, you can't really count on knowing if you're going to get anything from John Means the rest of the year. I mean, if you do, great. Maybe moves to a bullpen role, whatever. But if there's an opportunity for them, we've talked a lot about the bullpen, and I'll continue to talk about that because I still think they need that. But I think the last couple of weeks probably have reinforced the idea that we shouldn't be dismissive at all about if an opportunity presents itself to go out there and get a starter that might be controllable beyond 24, and you can fortify the rotation, strengthen the rotation, basically replace Corbin Burns next year if you're not going to re-sign him, which I don't expect that they are.
Well, that's why I'm thinking
That
that
sounds
way, right? I
important.
mean,
That sounds like a good
literally, right?
idea. Yeah.
with an owner who wouldn't mind taking on $10, $12 million of salary for some veteran that feels like they want to have that guy in their rotation. I mean, I don't. I think everything's on the table here other than dealing
Could
Henderson,
be.
Rutschman, or Holiday, or Westberg, right? Like, everything else is Rodriguez wouldn't be dealable. But, I mean, they have a handful of that. But everything else to me feels like we talk about these interchangeable parts, and there's only three slots in the lineup every night for nine guys to play or 10 guys in the organization right now.
I mean, it's just, as we've said, it's a good problem to have, but you still want to maximize your assets, right? You still want to be in a position where you're not just having someone sit at AAA. I mean, I think Kyle Stowers is a good example of this, not from a standpoint of what we're seeing now, where he's come up and he's shown some signs of being, maybe he is going to be a real player for them. But I think Kyle Stowers being stuck at Norfolk the last 2 years, has that hurt the perception that other teams have of him? Where they see a guy that is sitting there at Norfolk, he's put up numbers. Go look at his numbers. He's hit for a lot of power, all that. It's not as though he was bad at Triple A, but you do wonder if a guy gets stuck there and he's there for a couple years, the perception almost becomes that, oh, well, he's only a fourth outfielder, or oh, he's a quad A player, because the Orioles would he'd be in the majors if he was better
It
than
doesn't
that.
take long when you're 22, 23 to get that, right?
To get that reputation, and it was completely unfounded. It still is, and that doesn't mean he's an everyday above average major leaguer either. I mean, it's still an unknown, but you don't want to be in a position where these guys are blocked so long that it becomes counterproductive to then when the time comes that you want to trade them, that other teams are like, wait a second, why do you want to deal this guy when he's been stuck at, he's been stuck at Norfolk for 2 years, and now you're trying to trade him? Are you trying to pull a fast one on me?
Devaluing your own assets.
I've listened. I've heard this. I've heard this. I want to say it was Jim Duquette on MLB Network Radio. I was listening to it not long ago, and he presented. I don't know if I buy this, but I think it's an interesting idea at the very least. He actually presented the idea, the notion that the Orioles having such a deep, good minor league system. This sounds counterintuitive, but when you start to think about it, he said in some way, in a strange way, it almost might make it things more difficult for them to pull off the kind of trade that you suggest, because other teams look at this and say, you've got this rich system, you can give us a little more than what you're offering. And it almost becomes, the opposite of what you would think. You would think when you have all these players, you'd say, oh, well, trade should be easy. Well, these other teams know that the Orioles have a lot of great prospects, so they want a lot of talent. They want a lot in return. So again, I don't, I think you could kind of talk in circles. There's some circular logic that can go into play there, but it was an interesting notion at least. And
Other
we'll
teams don't
see
have
how
the
it plays out.
artillery to make the best deal, right? The Orioles
They don't.
always will have, like the Yankees always had that for years, where they had artillery and money to, and the Dodgers when we even when we made the Machado deal, right? Like there was a perception that their wealth buys them better players and all the way through, and they'll also give you more when the time comes because they're desperate to win and they feel like they're one player away. And we'll get one Yusnel Diaz thrown into the deal. See, I knew I'd make you groan. Oh, I was going to give you Kramer, but his arm hurts. I want, like Saray.
Kramer's the one who worked out. Diaz, not so much. I mean, last I saw, he was still in Double A. He was back with the Dodgers, but still in Double A. But yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that we don't know here that's still an unknown, one, what is, Rubinstein throwing out hats and soaking people in the bird bath and all that. That's great. I'm not diminishing that. I'm not diminishing that having value, but this is where we still don't know. And I don't mean this as a criticism. It's what it is. It's an unknown in terms of what he sees payroll, where he sees it going, where he sees them going from free agent standpoint and potential contract extensions. And we know this about Mike Elias. He's been very methodical in how he's built this, right? And even the trades he has made, I don't think you would view any of these trades, even the Burns trade. I mean, think about it. They gave up a couple assets, but Joey Ortiz was completely blocked. I mean, can you imagine Joey Ortiz still being in the conversation here, considering what Westberg has become, Mateo still being a valuable utility guy at the very least. Jackson Holliday, Gunnar Henderson. I mean, Joey Ortiz had nowhere to go. So they traded him. And yeah, DL Hall, while I very much was of the thought that I think the ship had sailed on him being a starter, DL Hall would look good in the back of this bullpen right now, you know, the healthy version we saw at the end of last year. So, but that said, it's not as though any of the trades Mike Elias has made at this point have been, wow, that's so extraordinarily bold. You know, even the Burns acquisition, which is good, I'm praising it. Let's be clear. Trading DL Hall and Joey Ortiz, you know, these weren't the two best prospects in your system either, you know, at that point in time. Ortiz is blocked, and you know, DL Hall again, I think he's a reliever. And if he's a reliever and not a starting pitcher, he's not the same kind of prospect anymore. So that's where I look at this and say, okay, at some point in time, and I've said this, we talked about this last year at the trade deadline, you know, with there being an inflection point where you say, are you willing to make the move or two that's going to get you over the hump? Now, they acquired Burns. Bravo for that. No questions about that. Whether they extend them or not, you know, that was a great move, even if just for 1 year. But at the deadline, whether we're talking about a starter or certainly a bullpen arm or two, is Mike Elias going to go out there and be as bold as he needs to be? And that doesn't mean that you trade away your entire system, but it might mean that, yeah, you trade away someone that you'd like to hold on to, but you see an opportunity for this team to maximize its chances of winning a World Series this
Where would they be
year.
without Burns if they didn't make that deal?
I mean, look, they'd still be good, but you know, would they be tied with the Yankees in the loss column right now? No,
Where are
they
those
probably
starts
wouldn't.
coming from you're talking about that, you know, that he's
I
made that
mean,
somebody else would make, you know, like.
I mean, it's, do I think Corbin Burns has been so unbelievably incredible and extraordinary? You know, it's not like he's thrown complete games. You know, he hasn't been a guy that's thrown 7 or 8 innings, but you have a great chance to win every time he pitches, and there's value to that. You know, we saw it last year when Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez became those guys. You know, Rodriguez more on the second half of the season, Bradish all year, you
Well,
know,
look, we've
but.
been beating them up since Sidney Ponson about and Eric Bedard about getting off-season pitching. I mean,
Yeah.
it was always Kyle Gibson. It was always that
Sure.
level of who they could get when the
Yeah.
fences were in and they stunk. Now they can get kind of anyone happily to come in and say, I'll be your rent-a-ace. And we may be moving into that era where this year it's Jimmy Key and next year it's David Wells and the year after that it's Kevin
Might
Brown and
be.
you know and if that's the way they're going to grow it around one Ben McDonald or one Mike Mussina who happens to be Grayson Rodriguez, I don't think it could be Bradish at this point. But that's up, you know, as long as the elbow sort of dangling and you're like maybe I don't know that I feel that way about him. But the pitching part of this, I don't think it's too early or too late to be talking about whatever that acquisition might be is going to come out of this depth. And you say, what
Yeah.
would be bold? Well, I mean, Kershaw was a lottery pick. They had to stink really bad for a year just to get
Yeah.
him. And if they feel like there's no spot other than DH on this team for him in this outfield on a team where they really value defense and their pitching's going to value defense and all the way philosophically they value defense, it would seem to make sense that if we rewind this 8 weeks from now and he's the guy that's out with, and I mentioned Mateo, and I meant, you know, I
Yeah.
think there are guys off the table now, but I think they have pieces that they could deal
Sure.
places where other places might, you might get a number three starter number. You have to come up with money too. Yeah. And they
Sure.
have an owner that will be willing to do that now. And that's part of Burns versus Gibson too, right?
Yeah, no question about it. And look, I mean, there are going to be moves to be made. There's no doubt about that. You know, and you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention what Thiago Vieira on Monday, which, man, I'm not even saying this to try to belittle the guy, but maybe the worst Orioles debut in club history. I mean, just awful. You know, maybe he'll bounce back. We'll see. I think you saw he's got a live arm, but I think you saw a glimpse of why my Milwaukee threw in the towel on him, and he was available in that trade. But you know, they've got to make moves. They certainly need to fortify their bullpen, and I think, you know, we'll see what's going to be the outcome with Means. We'll see if Dean Kramer truly is back in a week or two, you know, like they seem to indicate. We'll see if Kyle Bradish continues to look like Kyle Bradish. And I'm encouraged by that, let's be clear, but they're still unknown, right? I mean, anytime you have an elbow, you're wondering, but opportunities are going to be there. We'll just, you know, We'll see how bold Mike Elias is willing to be, whether it is trading a Kerstad or trading a Kobe Mayo. Like I said, I'd still like to see Cade Povich in the mix here. The numbers at Norfolk, go look at them. They're impressive. He's missed bats and ERA is really good. Could he be the guy that is this year's Grayson Rodriguez in terms of maybe second half of the season, contributing for them and pitching and being a part of their rotation? We'll see. But yeah, we're still two months out from the trade deadline. So we got a long way to go. But yeah, I think anyone who looks at where the Orioles are pitching wise, where the Yankees are in the division and how good their pitching is and how deep their pitching has been, it's difficult envisioning the Orioles really having their best chance to get over the hump without making a move or two of significance, of substance, by the trade deadline. And they have the pieces to do it, to your point, but Mike Elias ultimately will need to pull the trigger, and we'll see what it looks like. In the meantime, they are still winning a lot of games. They're still a really good team as they're presently constructed. And that's what's so encouraging about this. I think they have an opportunity to go from really good to even better. And that's a good place to be for an organization that could not even dream of such things not all that long ago.
Well, yeah, I say 15 years you and I have been at it, and only you and I could go 2 hours of talking about pitching and then the offense without even mentioning they don't walk enough. But we'll talk about that later on. Red Sox are in town. Maybe that's our topic for Friday at Fadley's. I'll have the Pac-Man scratch off to get away from the Maryland Lottery. Luke and I will be at Fadley's together on Friday. There's a whole litany. We're going to be at Cooper's next Tuesday in Timonium. We're going to be at State Fair next Thursday in Catonsville for brunch. The 12th at Coco's, the 14th at Slime. For Fleet Week, we're going to be at Costas in Dundalk on the 20th, Pappas in Parkville on the 25th later in the month. It's not karaoke night. That's Monday at Pappas. I'm going to be there on a Tuesday, but I will come and sing for my chicken franchise. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Good to be back on the grid. It's good to be here. It's good to be anywhere.